Hello there. Welcome to another episode of The Leftovers. This is the show after the show where we continue to chat because I'm just so chatty. I'm a chatty Cathy. I won't shut up. And I had a story that I posted over at ktth.com. Didn't actually talk about it on air. I thought it might be a little too in the weeds, but if you know, you know, I guess. It's one of these stories where I ended up getting attacked, quote unquote, by the stranger. And that happens all the time. I almost never talk about it because who cares? Seriously, like, who cares? People don't read the stranger the way that they would have you believe, which is precisely why they're only a blog now and not in print. It's why they had to beg for money from readers. Whatever. I actually don't wish them ill will. I don't not get along with anyone there, I guess. I don't know anyone there now when I did, other than Charles Mudede. When I say know him, meaning we've met and I've talked, I'm not mean to any of them. He's a little kind of a jerk to me, but I get along fine. I'm sure I would with any of the other writers. They would do what I would do and have done, which is get critical of bad opinions in what, in my view, that they're espousing, and they do the same to me. But there's this one guy named Charles Mudede who does this a lot. He goes on the attack all the time, and he's sort of harmless in the sense that he writes things that no one understands. And it's not that the concepts he's tackling are too obtuse, although that is also true. It's that he's very unclear and wants desperately to be seen as almost like an academic. He's not an academic. He's just your garden mill Marxist. And he took issue with a story I wrote and talked about on air last week where I said, hey, Boeing is in a little bit of trouble here. And it's time for Washingtonians to worry about what the economic future looks like if, unfortunately, Boeing continues to go down this road. They clearly have suffered from really bad news cycles. And I said this on the show today, sometimes unfairly, but they did bring this on themselves because of their cultural issues. And so I talked through the crisis and what it would mean for the economy. Now, his takeaway from that was that Marxism is a better answer. Capitalism can't solve this problem. That's his basic argument. But I couldn't really tell that from his article the first few times I read it. Now, I'm certain he was mocking me because he calls me, falsely, a far-right talk show host. I'm not far-right. Seriously. In fairness, I might be far-right to folks on the Stranger payroll because they're so far to the left. I mean, if you're a Marxist, then yes, I'm far-right. But to, like, normal people, I'm a conservative. I'm a mainstream conservative. Maybe not as mainstream on some issues in Seattle, but I am a mainstream conservative. Sometimes people call me a rhino, which they're just idiots. If you think I'm a rhino, then you must not know what the term is. But I'm clearly not far right. He did call me Seattle's leading far right voice, and I can appreciate. I would have expected Pacific Northwest instead of just Seattle because my influence is farther than that. But fine, kudos. I'll put that on my Tinder. I'm Seattle's leading conservative voice. And as I was reading this, I felt the need to defend myself this time. And yet, I could not decipher what he was trying to say. Because every attempt to read a Charles Mudede column will unfold in exactly the same way. Exactly the same way. And I wrote it down over at ktth.com. First, you read 2-3 sentences. You vaguely understand at least the topic that he's bringing up. You have a general understanding, but it's not entirely clear. Now, in this case, he said that I'm in a place of despair because Boeing is going through problems. I might be experiencing despair, but that's a side effect of my general self-loathing. Thank you very much. It has nothing to do with Boeing. Second, you read the next couple sentences, and you definitely don't understand what he's trying to say. You read the couple sentences a couple times and you're like, what is he? I don't understand what he's trying to say here. It doesn't make any sense. Now, again, in this case, he was quoting a philosopher, Baruch Spinoza, to try to explain what the state of despair that I was supposedly feeling actually is. And he leans into some quotes from the philosopher. And just as a side note, and I put this in the story, given how pro-Hamas the staff over at the Stranger are, I'm assuming no one there knew that Spinoza was Jewish, right? Can we generally take that assumption? Because I feel like if they knew, they wouldn't include his name in a supportive role. Unless, of course, he was, you know, bashing Jews. Now, after those two sentences confirm you don't know what he's saying, you say to yourself, okay, I've already read about four or five sentences. I can read one more. Maybe this next sentence will help put into context what it is I just read. But all that last sentence that you read does is confirm that the entire blog post will never make sense. And then you look at how long it is, and all of his stories are usually 200 words too long. But you realize in that moment, yeah, there's nothing you can do here. Alan Turing would need a stiff drink to get through one sentence that Charles Mudede writes, and it would take him months to crack that code. And so fourth, you just give up. You're kind of angry at yourself for wasting 3 minutes of your time trying to decipher what cannot be deciphered. Now, if I'm being totally honest, I was not that curious about what Mudede was trying to say, because again, he's pretty one note. Marxism is virtuous, capitalism is evil, blah, 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 blah. It's like reading a Mad Lib session. Just like a Marxist progressive Mad Libs where it's the same capitalism bashing and you just fill in different adverbs and adjectives and pronouns and whatnot. But I do like to punish my former producer who still works in the building. He's now the executive producer of the producers on the FM side. And he is a hardcore progressive. In fact, that's why he ultimately left the job. He overcame his low self-worth and decided to switch to a different show and then ultimately become the executive producer. But I was thinking to myself, if anyone could figure this blog out, could translate for me, it would be him. Because I've used him in the past to translate some far left stuff that just never made any sense. And so I sent it to him. He spent like 20 minutes on it. And he responded by saying, okay, that took me a while, but I think all he's saying is there's another option than Boeing recovering and Boeing failing, and it's that the government takes over the company. That way, it's not beholden to profits, and it can focus on safety. Now, that was one person's interpretation, and at that point, I realized, oh, wait a minute, I have access to ChatGPT. Let me put in the article and ask it to summarize it in just a couple of sentences. And it wrote back, quote, "The article draws on Spinoza's philosophy to differentiate between hope and despair, suggesting that Rance's despair stems from his unwavering belief in the market's ability to solve Boeing's crises. However, the situation has deteriorated, with Boeing's problems exposing the limitations of market solutions. The piece also discusses Marxist economic theory, suggesting that government intervention might be necessary to salvage Boeing and contrasting this approach with Rance's market-driven perspective." Now, it also, the ChatGPT, doing a fine job there in the summary, but it also got uncharacteristically snarky. It said, quote, "Summarizing that article felt like being in an intellectual escape room with Spinoza and Marx as the puzzle masters, and the clues are written in Boeing's technical manuals." That was pretty clever. Now, is it ironic to rely on Charles Mudede to interpret someone else's work? Yes, it's like reading a reverse Rosetta Stone that's written backward and upside down. He gets kind of close, maybe, I guess, but not quite right. And now that I think about it, not at all. It's like one of those reactions. Because my personal feelings on this, I think Boeing could cause flyers to lose trust in their planes. And if that happens, obviously Boeing suffers, but more importantly, it hurts the Washington economy and it hurts Washingtonians who rely on Boeing to thrive so they have jobs in Renton and Everett and the surrounding areas. That market forces are not the problem here. They're actually the solution. Boeing proves to consumers that they're safe and then consumers reward the company with trust again. That's how this works. And if they can't be a trustworthy company in the eyes of consumers, well, consumers can develop a company but also destroy it. And that's what would happen. The market would fix this. that Mudaity thinks the government is capable of running Boeing. Obviously, it's not surprising because he doesn't really understand capitalism. But all you have to do is look around the Puget Sound region and see projects that the government has taken on. Tell me if you think Boeing would be successful if the people who ran Sound Transit projects, which are always, always over budget and overdue, you think that they would be able to create safe planes? Really? They can't even keep Sound Transit trains safe from people who they could very easily make sure don't get on board so that they don't stab us. They can't even do that right. So, you know, I don't think that the government is in a position to do a better job than a company that is incentivized at this point to do better, because now they know everyone's watching. So thanks, Charles, but, you know, not quite. You got close, though. Kudos to you. You got really close. So that story, by the way, is up at ktth.com if you want to read it, if you want to share it. We also did a bunch of double shot videos last week. That's with Jake Skorheim from our sister station. We do a video every single day. We post it on our social media accounts. And I finally got the opportunity to really dive into something that bothers me so much when I am on transit, whether it's in this city or anywhere else. There's one thing that bothers me. Here's how that all unfolded on the double shot.
Hey everyone, it's time for another double shot. I take the bus because I don't drive very often. And one thing
are you a self-loathing person? Do you hate yourself?
Is yeah, that's why you take I take the bus. It's to humble myself and to be amongst the people.
Okay. Have you heard what's been going on buses lately?
I hate people. Yes, I have.
Yeah.
But here's the problem with taking the bus.
Everything?
And every once in a while, it's fine, usually on a weekend. But pretty much every single bus that I'm on, there's always one person who from the back of the bus screams, thank you, to the bus driver at the end of it.
Oh, yeah.
You're screaming thank you so people know that you said thank you. You're not really thankful. Because if you were, you would do what I do, which is just give a little... like that, just a little wave. Just like, that's your thanks.
You
I don't need everyone. I go like that. Or I do a little a nod. I usually go like that and a nod. I don't need to shout thank you.
Yeah.
First of all, he doesn't care.
The bus driver doesn't care.
He literally could care less if you even existed.
No.
They just want to get through the day. But you don't need to shout it so everyone knows that you're thankful. You're doing it for yourself. I cannot stand
Do you think that's the reason why? Do you think
100%.
They're just doing it so they can signal to the rest of the world,
I'm a good person.
I'm a person who thanks people.
Yeah.
And I want you to know it.
I'm a hero. I'm a good person. I respect the working person. There, I did it. And it's always...
Thank you.
It is always a white lady. It is always a white lady.
I believe that.
Every single time. And I'm so sick and tired of it.
I leave a note. Anytime I leave, I carry a pack of thank you notes and I hand it to the driver.
Yeah, because that's really caring.
Yeah,
it's a handwritten
really caring.
Note.
But then I turn around and I make eye contact with every single person on the bus. And I say, just to
anyone
let them
else
know.
Want to sign?
Yeah, you guys want to sign this card? That's what I do. I walk through the bus like two stops before my stop. Do they still do stops?
Yeah.
I haven't ridden the bus since
it's a rolling stop, so you have to roll over.
No, I like peace and quiet, so I drive my own car. But I walk through the bus with a thank you card, and I get everybody to sign it, and they love that. And then I hand it to the bus driver, and I thank you when I'm getting off.
You put a gift card in there?
No, gift card. It's a card. It's a sincere card. Yeah.
Have you ever received one of those cards in an office setting where someone's leaving and they say, oh, you want to sign their goodbye card? No, I don't.
Yeah. Who?
Almost.
Who's leaving?
There has been one case.
I've never met them.
There's been one case in this building in which they passed around a card for someone I had never heard of.
That happens almost every week.
Never heard of.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Yeah.
Other than that,
I recently sent a congratulatory email to somebody who's leaving for a new job, and I've never actually had a real conversation with him.
Never met the guy.
Never met him, but I wish them well.
Yeah, sure. Best of luck.
So there that was fun. There you have it. You can check out our double shot videos. Like I said, every day but Saturday, we post them. So you get 6 new little bits of content a week, in addition to this extra content on the podcast, which I'm doing because I am a glutton for punishment. And Not that I view you as punishment, but you know what I mean. It's a long day, man. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow.